We are on. We are talking entrepreneurship. My name is Jeffrey Davis. Thank you, and welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. And that's what we're always doing. We're talking to entrepreneurs, and we're doing it a lot. Now, our next guest, he has come here in many forms, shapes, and sizes over the years. Yes. And we're not talking about your diet now. Sure. We're talking about NFL star, financial star, entrepreneur. I mean, you name it. He's just a jack of all trades. Pete Cronin, Super Bowl winner twice, correct?
Once, but two once. Visits.
No, two. Yeah. From Video Niche now, right?
Yes. Video Niche.
Yes. Wow.
So a little change. Last time I was here, I was working for an large corporate environment.
Right.
I hit the proverbial wall with the restructuring, and my services were deemed as overpaid and certainly underappreciated. Got caught in the restructuring.
It's like being at home.
And it was just like being at home, so I was prepared, and took a stab 2 years ago. Making the decision which direction I wanted to go. And I ended up making a decision to pursue an entrepreneurial opportunity with Video Niche. So it's been just about 2 years into the business, and it's been quite an experience after being in large corporate for so many years. I was in large corporate for almost 30 years. So it's a very different experience being an entrepreneur.
I got three doors in front of me, Monty Hall, who just passed away. Goodbye, Monty. I got Door NFL, Door Merrill Corp, big corporation, and Door Entrepreneurship. Tell me pros and cons of each. Is that okay?
Sure. Where would you like me to begin?
Well, I mean, you've really lived three full corporate, totally different corporate lives. Probably learned the best of both of all worlds, and probably tried to drag along the best of all worlds. But you've probably also seen the worst of all worlds. I just think it's a good story.
Well, the football was literally was a path of least resistance. You know, it started in high school. I was a clumsy teenager, struggling with identity, struggling with self-value, not uncommon, but realized that I had a propensity I like to hit people and run around and. Although clumsy was
great. So did I, but they hit me harder.
Yeah. So, and they actually rewarded me for doing it. Which was an added benefit. But for the first time in my life, I did something that was people thought was good. So right. I really glommed onto it. I was in football through high school, college, and then 9 years in the National Football League, and entered, got out of football when I was in my early 30s. And so one of the great challenges when you're growing through adolescence and into adulthood is identity. Who are you? And it's not uncommon in professional football, even collegiate football now, when people's careers end, they really struggle with their identity. I think it's an underemphasized challenge for people coming out of organized sports.
Look, I coach, I would call what most people would describe as, super successful leaders of entrepreneurial companies, and they struggle with identity. That's what gets them out of the bed every
That's
day,
right.
Trying to create something that that they don't have today that they want tomorrow.
Right, absolutely. And unfortunately, with professional athletics, any athletics, there's a wall. You hit the wall. Now, of course, tennis players and softball or soft baseball players and hockey players and basketball players can play well into their, geriatric years if they like. Football is a little bit different. You hit I can't go out and play football now. If I go out and play football, it'll be a one-shot deal. So
You mean football with tackling?
Yeah, like
versus
legitimate.
What Chris and I did as a kid in a field, just throwing even, to each other.
Even that is a challenge. As the aging thing, you can't run from the aging thing. But right. what I confronted then coming out of football was a decision that I had to make about my next course of action, and a lot of, again, path of least resistance. I chose to depart from that. Had an offer to coach in the National Football League and turn the opportunity down. Because the challenge for me was not in football. I knew I'd be a good coach. I knew I'd have some level of success. Of course, the trade-off is you're moving every 5 years. It's very unstable.
It's very hard work.
Yeah, it's a gypsy job. It's a very hard job, and you're always moving. And I wanted to avoid exposing my family to that. If I could. Now, I told Joe Gibbs, offered me the job. I told him after thinking about it over the weekend that I was going to turn him down. He said, "Don't ever turn me down. Let me be the first." But I did, and I said, "I owe you an explanation." I said, "Because first of all, there's two reasons why I would get back into the game. Number one is I couldn't feed my family." And at the time, I had a job working in the financial print industry, although not making a whole lot of money. but with upside opportunity to earn. The other was, I just can't live without it. And I was got involved with Boston College Radio. So I was getting my quote-unquote football fix by virtue of calling football games on the radio. So those two voids were filled at that point in time. Now, I don't regret not taking that job, but I think of what might have been. It's kind of like, wow, what if had I taken a left instead of a right? However, that set me up for a career in business. And so I spent the next 30 years or so working in financial print and becoming, well, the best I could be at the role I was playing at the time. We were either carrying a bag as a salesman, a regional manager, a site manager, became a regional manager, became president of the company, ran a $350 million global service company for a couple of years, then got into machinations corporate life and what goes on with companies in these days with funding and private equity and changes in roles and responsibilities. And I played along until I got caught in kind of the numbers game. And ironically, when the gentleman who sent me unpacking 2 years ago after 17 years of uninterrupted, loyal, and highly productive service, I said, hold on a second.
Sounds like a nice guy.
Real nice guy, yeah. But I said to him, I said, let me get this straight. So are you familiar with the concept of a meritocracy? And he says, of course I am. But I said, well, bear with me. I'm the guy that doesn't have a job. So you get a job, you learn your job, you do your job, really well. And then you learn and do other jobs, you do them really well. And you're rewarded in corporate culture with title, with options, stock options, with compensation, longevity and security in your position because you're outperforming. And he said, yeah, that's a meritocracy. And I said, well, I've done all of that. I don't understand what's the basis of you sending me onto my next endeavor. He says, Pete, this isn't a meritocracy. You're the answer to an arithmetic problem.
Right.
And it hit me right in the face that—
Salary cap.
Exactly. But it was like they were restructuring the company to package it, to sell it to somebody else. They needed to get rid of as much fixed cost as possible. They're willing to take the risk of getting rid of a guy like me who was highly productive and all those things.
For a highly educated millennial, that's a third the price.
Or less. And so that was the trade-off. And then I found myself at another crossroads, like the crossroads in football, going into business, now at the crossroads, leaving large corporate where I had a great deal of success and planning my next series of steps. I was directed back to large corporate, and I kind of had my fill of it. And I always envisioned viewed myself as having an entrepreneurial spirit, but never really had the chops to take the risk. And I found myself in a position in my life where I could finally take a risk with mitigated risk, both financially and from a career standpoint.
Well, you had worked a long time. You had built a career at a big corporation. Plus, I assume you had a little bit of a pension from the NFL.
Little is a good word to describe.
I mean, I know it's changed in the last 20 years.
Much better for the guys now, but that's a whole another show, Jeffrey.
Right.
So, but the so they were. Yeah, I was well positioned to make a decision and take somewhat of a mitigated risk, and that's I found myself with a good friend of mine who's been friends since college, a guy by the name of Steve Goodwin, who we were buddies, back in college, who was a serial entrepreneur who was running this business that was a SaaS business. And it's a learning enablement technology. And I had been running a SaaS business when I was back in my last job. So I thought I had the credentials to step into this thing. And it's been quite an interesting ride the last 2 years.
You know, I read on your bio what you do at the Video Niche. Can you describe that for our listeners? Because it's really quite interesting.
Well, I'm a business development is really the nice way of saying you called it jack of all trades. I mean, right. That's part of being we were an army of six. We have a big brother investor in Kramer, which is a company down in Norwood that owns a significant portion of the company. It's the brick and mortar piece of our company. We're really an extension of them in that we are living in an environment where there's six of us who are doing just about everything. Now, I'm not heavy on the production side or the technology side, but anything related to strategy and tactics, selling and service falls under my domain. And service might mean, washing dishes, but certainly not beyond that. But on the other hand, building strategies around developing business opportunities and generating sales and making sure that our customers are served appropriately. That's in a nutshell what I do. But I get out of bed every morning energized. I'm enthusiastic about the business. And where what makes this interesting for me is where we are ahead of the tipping point in terms of a rather significant adoption for our technology.
Who purchases Video Niche?
Well, essentially anybody who's in the business of transferring knowledge, corporate knowledge in particular. So think of the amount of time, energy, money that goes into
a law firm, an architectural firm.
Anybody who's got institutional knowledge, they want to transfer, they want to move from point A to point B, or individual A to individual B. And what our technology does, we had a focus group a couple months ago of customers and prospects. We sat them in a room. And what happens is when we talk to people, they can't articulate exactly what they want. They see it. They have difficulty describing it. So this focus group helped us come up with a statement that captures what companies are looking for. Every single company on earth is looking to accomplish what I'm going to tell you right now. All of them are. And what we know is that every company on earth who's trying to accomplish this goal is ineffective. What they're doing now is ineffective. They need something to elevate or enhance the experience. So we improve employee productivity. Every company wants to do that. They want to increase speed to function. How quickly can get you as a student of our business to a participant in our business and be highly functional? How do we enhance engagement? Companies, the turnover rate now is substantial when you consider that 50% of the U.S. workforce next year will be under the age of 40, loosely classified as millennials. What have they made clear to us? What they've made clear to us is sitting in a classroom is not the way they want to learn. They want to learn with handhelds. They want to learn with their iPads. They want to learn with their phones. So they also don't want books, and they don't want three-ring binders. They don't want grease boards. They don't want a professor or a teacher in front of the classroom. They want video. They want it snappy. This is the YouTube generation. They want it quick. They want it on demand. They want it to be entertaining. And if you can get those three things to the learner, the productivity, the probability of having a more productive employee, an increased speed to function, enhanced engagement, expanded interaction. Employees are looking to feel like they're connected with a company instead of, I'm just a small cog in a big wheel. All these things are playing into the culture of knowledge transfer within companies. All these companies also want to do this at a reduced cost. So they want to do all these things. They want to improve, they want to accelerate, they want to enhance, they want to expand, they want to reduce, and they want to do it all for a more effective learning experience for their employees, current employees, and the future employees. That's a lot. It's a lot of stuff right there.
It's a lot. I'm listening, and it's a lot.
Our technology is the core piece that allows companies to accomplish all these goals.
Wow. So if I were a company, and it sounded like it was an internal device to help build greater commitment, morale, knowledge transfer within a company, and I wanted to learn more about Video Niche, how would I find it and find you?
Well, VideoNiche.com, yeah. VideoNiche, no C-H-E, you know, it's a quirk, you know, it's a quirky little name. So VideoNiche.com, go on. We just updated our website. You can reach me at pcronin@videonutch.com. And you can always hear me on the radio on Saturdays calling Boston College football games. So I'm an easy guy to find. And if you're ever wondering who I am, I'm the guy making the least amount of sense.
Hey, can I come up and watch a football game with you once?
Why not? We'll do an interview with you.
I'd just love to come up sometime.
There's not much there, Jeffrey.
In the press box.
There's not much there.
Oh, you mean with you or with the game?
Both.
Are you frustrated this year?
Not yet. No, it's early. Still early.
They're in a tough position, aren't they?
A little bit of one. Boston College is in a very difficult, probably the toughest conference in America in the ACC.
And not the same emphasis on...
Well, different emphasis.
Football.
We were at Clemson a couple of weeks ago, and you want to talk about big time. It's big time.
I know.
And for college football fans, it's a destination.
I remember when I was... drove across Canada and the United States. I spent, all the states and all the provinces, and I I remember going to see the University of Michigan
stadium. Big house.
101,000.
Quite a place.
I was blown away.
Yeah. It's a very different experience here in New England. We tend to be a little parochial, and there's a lot of competition. You think about the places like Clemson and Michigan.
Right.
Imagine taking all of the fans for the Celtics, the Bruins, the Red Sox.
All together.
All of them, and only channeling them to one venue.
Right. Well, I've been to Penn State, too.
Which is Penn State.
Yeah.
So that's where people say, well, Boston's kind of,
Wisconsin.
Kinda, you know, BC's, you know, you only get 54,000. You know, there's kind of this kind of matter-of-fact fan base. And you say, well, yeah, well, if you're in, why can't you do it like Clemson or Michigan or Wisconsin? Well, because we're not.
Wisconsin beside me.
We're not. Well, the Badgers, we're not. How are the Wisconsin Red Sox doing in the Major League playoffs this year? Well, they're not. So people are going to the Wisconsin game. And that's what people around New England, in particular the talking heads, the sports media, doesn't seem to embrace. And the reason, colleges don't, I believe.
Being a sports announcer on talk radio in Boston doesn't necessarily mean you know anything about the sport you're talking about.
Well stated. I think it's a function of, and from my perspective, it's work ethic. I preach this from the highest mountain. These guys, forget BC.
Right.
I'm loyal to BC, but forget that. Yeah, you've got all these professional sports. But there's a phenomenon that occurs every March in this country, which is it's a runaway train. It's called March Madness.
Right.
And Boston, greater Boston, New England, had a national championship in Connecticut for a number of years.
Right.
Well, the
women's team's still good.
Very good point. But but you've got Boston College, you got BU, you got Northeastern, you got Harvard, you got Providence. All these schools, and I'm leaving a few out, have a possibility, and most probably you're going to be in the tournament. The rest of the world, their hair's on fire.
I know.
Because of the March Madness. You know what we get in Boston? Stugatz. We got nothing. We get pedestrian emphasis. And my take on this is it would require some work to actually have some sort of intellectual dialogue around something like that.
Well, as everybody can see, there's nothing boring about Pete Cronin. Known him many times, brought Pete to corporate retreats, talks about Super Bowls, talks about what it means to be a champion, a leader. Worked for Merrill Corp, did a great job there. I know you did. Now at Video Niche, lucky people at Video Niche.
Well,
and Kramer, too.
Well, we get out of, like you said, we get out of bed every morning with a sense of purpose. And
right.
We think we get something that's going to help people live, do better business.
Well, Pete, thanks for coming on, and you come again.
Jeffrey, thank you very much, and take care. Be
great.
Safe.
Thank you.
I mean that to everybody.
Me too.
Be safe.
This is Radio Entrepreneurs. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages.